Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, why are men's haircuts cheaper than women's haircuts? Like, think about it. Theirs require so much finesse and detail. And when I get my haircut, it's like 1 inch being taken off and I'm paying $150.
Because so much that men do costs less than what we do?
Look, I love my stylist. He is worth every penny. I don't think that women should pay less for haircuts. I just think men should pay more.
We should pay the same.
We should pay the same for haircuts. Absolutely. That's never going to happen. This week, we're joined by Shaniqua McClendon to take on the following questions. Why was E. Jean Carroll's victory in court kind of a surprise? How would a world without no-fault divorce look? Does Elizabeth Holmes deserve a shot at redemption? And how did Mother's Day, Nurses Appreciation Week, and Teacher Appreciation Week end up on the same week? Will we have enough flowers? All this and more right now. All right, you're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that serves cunt, but in a cozy way.
Look at Alyssa, this. Who's cozy today?
I feel like if we were going to have a cozy off, you are the cozier.
It's by just merit of my climate.
Right. I mean, you know, where I live, everybody's very temperature sensitive. Mm-hmm. So if something is like below 65 degrees, we're wearing like parkas. And if it gets above 80, we're freaking out.
But I mean, you're speaking of the other people. You're a Wisconsinite. You know the difference between hot and cold.
Nope. I don't actually. It took like a year and it went away and now I'm a wimp and I can't handle anything. But speaking of someone who is the opposite of a wimp.
Oh!
Should we tackle the big headline?
Erin, yesterday, in one of the rare occasions that we didn't get Wednesdayed, we got a verdict in the E. Jean Carroll Donald Trump case. And Erin, Donald Trump was found liable in the case that E. Jean Carroll brought against him. The court said that he needed to pay her $5 million because they thought he defamed her. And in one of the more curious parts of this case, which we can discuss, he was found guilty of sexual abuse, but not rape. Erin, what's the difference?
I truly don't know, and I'd imagine there's a lot of legalese behind that difference. But what I think is really interesting is because it's a civil trial, they're talking about preponderance of evidence, right?
Right.
And not beyond a reasonable doubt. So.
Right.
What the jury had to decide was whether it was more likely than not that he defamed her, or more likely than not that he sexually abused her, and they couldn't agree on the rape thing. Honestly, I wonder if she's ever going to see that $5 million. Do you think she is?
No, I don't. I mean, I think it's a great award. I think that this is, you know— E. Jean's case is the first case of the more than a dozen women who have accused him of sexual misconduct to be successfully tested before a jury. So this is a great thing. But he's going to appeal this. We know he's going to appeal this. It's going to be held up in court forever. So I don't know if she'll ever see the money. But it is still better than the alternative.
Yeah, I think I wrote something about this for the Daily Beast where I moonlight.
Ooh.
And I really think that E. Jean Carroll is a hero.
Totally.
And I'm not saying that in like a I'm not exaggerating or using hyperbole. I think she's a hero. I think that E. Jean Carroll has been around the block enough to know that there's a certain set of things that tend to happen when a woman accuses a powerful man of sexual assault or misconduct or sex pesthood or whatever. You know, she was around, she was writing, she was in the scene when Anita Hill was being badgered and torn to shreds because she accused Clarence Thomas, one of the worst Supreme Court justices in American history.
Mm-hmm.
Of being a fucking creep to her when she worked for him. She saw the way that, sexual assault, sexual harassment was handled in the 90s. She knew what could happen to her. And yet she was just like, fuck it. I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to keep pursuing this anyway. And I find that to be so admirable. And she's so, and not that people that aren't pursuing legal action against Trump aren't tough, But E. Jean is a true icon, I think, of fearlessness when it comes to this, because the odds were stacked against her and she won. She won.
It's incredible. And, you know, the jury was made of 6 men and 3 women. So Donald Trump can't say it was just all the vajayjays that came out for her. I mean, 6 men and 3 women thought that he did something wrong. So we'll take it.
Yeah. I also think, you know, he's kind of already out there trying to raise money off of this and saying he never knew her, even though there's photos of them together at a party. He also said that he never had a chance to defend himself, which is not true. He did. He missed the deadline and he didn't. Also, his lawyer's name, this is very immature of me.
No, it's okay. I know what you're going to say and say it.
It sounds like taco penis. It sounds like, I feel like someone's going to, taco pina, but it's almost taco penis, which it's an interesting visual is all I'm saying.
I agree.
So, yeah. And you know, the Trump's lawyer, I get it. I think that sometimes in stories like this, the lawyers get dragged. Honestly, their job is to just provide the best possible representation for their client. They're not really, you know, they take on a case, I guess, but they don't really have the power to just, like, be like, well, yeah, I guess you're right in the middle of court. You know what I
right,
mean?
Right, like, totally.
We can't, like, get mad at most lawyers. But I think the Tacopina was... Taco Penis was exceptionally an asshole during these proceedings. At one point, he asked E. Jean, why didn't you scream?
Oh, yeah. Why didn't you scream? Donald Trump's attacking you. Why didn't you just scream?
I don't know, man. That's just, that really betrays a fundamental lack of understanding of how human emotions work and how things work when you're shocked. But I think overall this is great. I'm excited about it. I tend to agree with you, Alyssa. I don't think that
– Yeah.
I'm not optimistic that she's going to see that money. But it'd be cool if she did. I hope she takes a cool vacation.
Yeah, I hope she gets some of it.
Yeah, she better. She better. She deserves it and more. I want to segue into something that we have been meaning to talk about for a few weeks, and we keep pushing it off, but I think now is the time. Conservatives have been quietly coming for no-fault divorce in the U.S. So no-fault divorce is when your marriage can dissolve without either party having to prove wrongdoing on behalf of the other party. So, you know, before no-fault divorce was first legalized in California by a guy named Ronald Reagan in 1969, it was really, really hard to get a divorce in the U.S. The people used to move to Nevada because in Nevada it was slightly easier than it was in other places. You just had to live there for 6 weeks and then you could pretty much file for divorce and just say whatever you wanted, but it still was not no-fault divorce. In Alabama, before the Civil War, if you were a couple in Alabama and you wanted to dissolve your marriage, you needed to take the case to the state legislature and obtain a 2/3 majority in both houses.
Can you imagine? Your marriage sucks and you have to go to the legislature?
You just have to, oh God, the Alabama legislature, that, pre-Civil War.
Right. Even worse.
That is somebody's version of hell. That is like that is literal hell.
That is actual hell.
Anyway, it sounds absolutely terrible. But in other states that weren't as extreme, you had to prove adultery, cruelty, or abandonment. And usually the party that had done the wrongdoing, like, fared better after the divorce. So you were sort of in, like, a standoff with your partner. If both of you were just like, we just don't want to be married anymore, or like, my husband is emotionally terrorizing me. Like, you can't, it's really, really hard to prove what is happening behind closed doors. So a lot of times people would get creative. So people who really wanted to get a divorce would, like, this is true. In New York, for example, which didn't legalize no-fault divorce until 2010.
So embarrassing for New York. I was so embarrassed for New York.
Crazy. But before that, you had to prove adultery, cruelty, or abandonment. And one of the ways that people used to prove adultery was they would, like, hire a detective to follow around one of the spouses, and the spouse would, like, stage fake adultery.
Erin, it sounds like a plot line from As the World Turns. Like, I think they did this in the soaps in the 70s.
It truly does. I mean, you had to prove it to a court that, like, your spouse had cheated on you. So what was happening was all of these people were committing perjury in order to get divorced. They were, like, straight up going and, like, lying. Like, yeah, I messed around on my husband, because they just really were desperate to get out of marriages. And when no-fault divorce was finally legalized in places like California and then across the country until Slowpoke New York finally jumped aboard at the very end, there were really, like, positive outcomes, especially for women.
Totally.
There was a decline in suicide, 20%, according to the National Bureau of Economic Research. 20% drop in women committing suicide. Rates of domestic violence also dropped. And so, of course, now we are conservatives are targeting this.
Well, an interesting thing, too, a recent statistic was, which we can understand now why conservatives are targeting this, among many other things, 2/3 of heterosexual divorces are initiated by women now.
Men would rather change the laws than do some goddamn housework every once in a while.
Be nicer.
Oh, my God. There's a simpler path to fixing this. They want people to get married and stay married, essentially, is what conservatives say. And no-fault divorce.
Covenant marriage. Erin, in Texas, they want covenant marriage. I was like, is this Big Love? Am I watching Big Love right now?
Wait, what's covenant marriage? Explain that.
Covenant marriage. It says, so this was in the language that Texas introduced to end no-fault divorce. We urge the legislature to rescind unilateral no-fault divorce laws to support covenant marriage and to pass legislation extending the period of time in which a divorce may occur to 6 months after the date of filing for divorce. So, Erin, they believe that marriages are meant to just be a covenant, and you're supposed to stay together even if you hate each other, because it's better for the family unit and better for the kids.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
They just want – I mean, I honestly think that conservatives want women to be forced into a life of indentured servitude to men that they cannot escape. Look, here's the thing about marriage. I'm married. I take it very seriously. I plan on being married until one of us dies or we both kill each other. But I also think that I really am glad that I have the freedom to divorce. And I'm sure you are, too. And, I think that, like, look, if you think marriage is, like, you know, a magic party and you can never break up, then fine. Believe in the magic. Why do you need the law to back you up? Why do you need, like, the power of the state to enforce, like, a contract, essentially, that you signed with another person? It doesn't make, like, any sense. And yeah,
what I was going to say is that no-fault divorce is so accepted. It's actually, you know, colloquially, however you say that word, it's irreconcilable differences. This is kind of how we hear it referred to. People get divorced for irreconcilable differences. There was a movie about it in, like, the 70s or early 80s. And from the 70s or early 80s, we now have the RNC in 2016 actually talking about this at their convention. They considered adding language to their platform that said children are made to be loved by both natural parents united in marriage. So here's my question. Then are they cool with no-fault divorce if you don't have kids? Like, is the only reason to get married to have kids?
In Nebraska, the GOP has publicly stated that its belief is that no-fault divorce should only be for couples that don't have kids. I think it's really, like, it's truly bleak. I think that part of the reason we're talking about this now is because there's this right-wing blowhard named Steven Crowder, who became a meme because he – this is, like, what I picture when I picture him. I picture him just, like, being a sort of avatar of, like, male frustration.
Yeah.
And sort of a belief that he is better and has more to offer than he does, to a, like, cartoonish degree. If he were a character in a comedy, he would be a very funny character. But if, you know, he's a character in real life and it's not funny at all because a lot of people believe what he says. he recently, he lives in Texas, and recently his wife filed for divorce from him. And he took to his podcast and was whining about it in a very, you know, manly. He was whining in a very manly way. But he was upset because he, you know, he was basically saying your wife can just cheat on you and leave and then she gets half of everything, which is like a way oversimplification, and that's not normally what happens. But then, you know, a couple weeks later, a video came out that it really wouldn't matter if Texas had no-fault divorce or not, because there's video of Crowder berating and being straight up emotionally abusive to his wife, who at the time was pregnant with their twins. She was 8 months pregnant. So I don't know what his point is.
And wasn't he accusing her of, like, not doing her wifely duties?
I don't know what that means. What does he think?
Is it cooking and cleaning? Is that his vibe?
My impression was that it was sex.
Oh. Here I was thinking it was dinner.
Look, she's 8 months pregnant. Some people are able to have sex throughout their pregnancies and it's comfortable and fine. Most people are not. So whatever wifely things he was expecting of her, whether that was like cleaning the house, which when you're all balanced weird like that, that's kind of hard.
I cannot imagine.
Trying to have sex. There's like one position that works when you're that pregnant, and sometimes that position doesn't feel good. What does he like? Gross, dude. She's carrying your children. I just hope that in their divorce settlement, there is a generous trust fund set up to pay for those twins' future extensive therapy, because he seems like a shitty dad. Yeah. Shitty dad, shitty person, shitty husband. So, you know, what's super interesting is that it really wouldn't actually take a legislative vote to end no-fault divorce in Texas. I mean, we just saw something happen in Texas that affected the entire country with the Mifepristone ruling by Judge Matthew Kaczmarek. Yep. Who is coincidentally a sympathetic judge to the no-fault divorce?
Shocking! That is so shocking.
Team. Yep. If the right plaintiff shopped and made sure that they filed their case in the right district, they could. Oh my goodness! Just happen to end up having their case in front of Judge Kaczmarek, who could, because of the way the drunk 22-year-old geniuses who founded our country set it up, he could theoretically make no-fault divorce illegal in the state of Texas if, you know, if the right case was filed. So that's fun. Mm-hmm. Do you think, Alyssa, that it even makes sense for women to get married anymore?
No. It's like, why? If you live in any of these states, what is the point? You know, everything's a little bit of a risk, right? But if they say that 50% of couples end up getting divorced, which is the stat that's always thrown around, who wants to—
50% of marriages end in divorce.
Yes.
Which includes second and third marriages. So people that tend to get married a bunch of times also tend to get divorced a bunch of times.
It seems right.
So, like, it's not 50% of people— 50% of marriages.
Yes, 50% of marriages. So why would you risk it? Why would you put yourself out there to end up before fucking Judge Kaczmarek potentially? I mean, this is they really are trying to wind back the hands of time.
It's crazy because there are ways to incentivize marital partnerships and incentivize having children. I guess if there were some sort of cultural shift in the way that men are expected to interact in their households, in terms of contributing to household labor, there's still a lot of stats out there that show that even when women earn more than their husbands outside of the home, they still do the lion's share of the housework. So, yeah, I mean, I guess there could be like a culture shift around men actually performing more duties when it comes to housework, house maintenance, childcare. But then also there could be like, you know, legal shifts around the way that we support parents. We could make parenting easier and less stressful.
Paid leave, all kinds of things.
All kinds of things. I feel like if parenting were less stressful because of things that we put into place or we refuse to fix, I think the stress that like the system causes families, Like, they take it out on each other. Like, it's not right. It's not rocket science. Like, you're a family trying to figure out childcare, and you've got two kids under four, and one of them is an infant, and you only have, like, 6 weeks of family leave, and every daycare in your neighborhood has a nine-month waiting list. What the fuck are you supposed to do with your baby all day? Somebody's got to quit.
Right.
Somebody's got – it's like – the amount of stress that this dumbass system we live in causes, like, I feel like directly contributes to the divorce rate and to couples being unhappy with each other after they have children and to all manner of problems. Like, fucking fix it, guys. Like, the answers are right there. Make
right
it less
there.
Stressful to have
Make
children.
Make it less – it's like, could you just imagine, though, that you're one of these men in Texas and you're like, you know what? The world is just falling apart. You know, no-fault divorce has led to less women being abused, less spousal homicide, less depression, less domestic violence. There's a problem with this law and we should fix it. Like, what? Like, what is that room of dudes? Like, I don't know. Aaron, it's really – it's reading all of this stuff and doing all this research. It was really hard to fathom that they'll do anything to control women,
okay,
including ignore facts and logic.
Well, let's just pretend that women are animals because they see us as animals anyway.
Yeah.
Let's say you have a horse, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have a horse, and the horse lives in a barn, and there's like a giant hornet's nest in the barn, and the hornets keep stinging the horse, and the horse is like really upset.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not giving the horse good food, and the horse is kind of sick, and there's not enough sunlight. But, like, the gate of the barn, if the horse pushes against it hard enough, the horse can, like, escape.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, so the horse escapes all the time because the horse is, like, getting stung. The horse hates being in there. The horse
is not living its best life.
The horse is having a terrible time. And rather than being like, oh, you know what? I'm going to knock down the hornet's nest. I'm going to give my horse better food. I'm going to take care of it. You're like, I'm going to lock the gate.
Yeah.
So the horse can't get out. Like, fuck you.
Fuck you.
You're a terrible horse owner.
Let the horse out.
Let the horse
happy
out.
Or to be the horse in this scenario.
Let the horse out or fix the barn. You know? Don't lock the horse in a crappy barn. That's the worst of both worlds. You fucking psychos.
Psychos.
Anyway. Speaking of psychos, I really want to talk about this. I don't want to talk about this, but we didn't talk about this when it was first in the news. And I really want to put it out there because it's not like we're moving toward a future where men are trying to use reproductive coercion to control women. It's here. It's here. It might not have come for you or your friends yet, but it's here and it's coming. So there was a man in Texas who I believe we talked about on the show who sued his wife's friends after they helped her get abortion pills. But the real background of the case was that the man knew his wife had the pills before she took them. He found them in her purse while secretly searching for it, and then he put them back because he wanted her to take it so he could then blackmail her into staying with him.
Yep.
He also searched his wife's phone and took screenshots of texts between her and her friends who were talking about getting her medication abortion. And then he reported his wife to the police, but not because she wanted to keep her from having an abortion. He just wanted to keep her from divorcing him after years of emotional abuse.
What the fuck?
Yeah. He also this man also called his wife a whore in front of her coworkers, emotionally tortured her, and then, you know, reported her to the police. His lawyer is a man named Jonathan Mitchell, who's an important quote unquote pro-life piece of shit, and he's representing the abusive husband. So, like, you know, the pro-life movement likes to pretend that it's all, like, you know, Ann Getty's pictures of babies
in cabbage.
It's like, what? I can smile at 6 weeks. And it's like, bitch, that's a nine-month-old baby. A six-week-old fetus looks like a translucent flesh tadpole, and it's tiny. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? But that's not the pro-life movement. The pro-life movement is representing abusive shitheads. Shitholes. Representing these men that would do anything to abuse their wives into staying. So, yeah. Anyway, so that's where we're at with men trying to chase us back into the kitchen and keep us there forever. Mm-hmm. They're really going for it in Texas. Okay, we've got one more story. Alyssa, do you want to take it away?
This is just a quickie. Everyone who needs a mammogram, which is anybody over 40, according to the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force, should go get one. Erin, this was very controversial about 10 or so years ago, back in 2009, when they upped the age for your annual mammogram, your preventative screening, to 50. This was very confusing. It gave insurance companies the running room to deny mammograms to people who couldn't prove between the age of 40 and 50 that they had a elevated risk and therefore needed them. This actually was a problem for me when I went to go get my first mammogram, but luckily, Erin, I have dense breasts, so I am technically in a higher risk, but wouldn't have known that had I not.
Wait, is that lucky? It's lucky? Wait, it's lucky that you're higher risk? Oh, it's lucky that you will actually, your insurance will pay for it.
Exactly. And that I found out that I have dense breasts, which usually means you have to go and then get an ultrasound after your mammogram to make sure there's nothing living in that dense tissue. This is very important. Everyone listening, if you are 40, go get your mammogram, because 12.9% of women will be diagnosed with breast cancer at some point. So get your mammogram. The reason that they actually have gone back and lowered it to 40 is that they don't know why, but they're seeing higher instances of younger women actually developing breast cancer. And one of the reasons, which my doctor had told me, but is worth everybody knowing, is that if you are a woman who has either put off your childbearing, or, you know, you've put off having kids, or you decided not to have children, you actually are at an elevated risk for breast cancer. Women of color at elevated risks for breast cancer. So if you're 40, go get your mammogram.
Can I just say, I'm not there yet, but there's got to be a better way than the mammogram. Can't they just go straight to the ultrasound?
Okay, so do you know how many times I've asked this? Because, Erin—
like, why can't— figure so if it, this were men, if men were getting their balls smashed between two plates every year after age 40, you better fucking believe they would figure out something
like,
better.
Isn't there just like an MRI situation where they can put us in the tube and just take the pictures? Because I have to tell you, it is honestly fine. But when you have little tiny boobies like I do, it is not comfortable getting that mammo.
I think it is not comfortable, but less comfortable than a mammogram is a cancer diagnosis.
100%. So I put my pink robe on proudly and I'm like, smush my titty.
But, you know, look, I'm just putting it out there, doctors. Please, please figure something out. Please,
anything.
Please figure something
anything.
Out. I like wince. Every part of my torso is wincing thinking about getting this done, even though I know when the time comes, I will do it. But I will, I'm going to have to take myself out to ice cream afterwards. Like, I just got blood drawn and I'm a, you know, a 12-year-old.
And here's just my thing, Erin, about the mammograms and about insurance and about the risk gauge. The risk gauge should be a great guidance, right? It's like, okay, none of the women in my family have had breast cancer, so I'm just going to go at 40, find out what's going on. But, like, what does insurance think you're doing? Like, say that you want to get one at 35 or you want to get one at 30. Who the fuck cares? Why won't insurance cover it? How are you scamming the system by getting a mammogram? It's not like you're asking for opioids. You know what I mean? Like, who is
like you're
benefiting?
Asking for, like, it's not even like you're asking for, like, you know, like a mild sedative. Like,
you're asking to have your boobs squished between two plastic plates, okay? Who's gaming the system on this one? I don't know. I wish insurance companies would just— preventative screenings for anything just seem like such a low-cost investment in our health. I don't really understand it, but
I just really need to get to a point where we have universal health care so that we can just abolish all insurance companies, because fuck them. There's no such thing as liking your insurance. They're literally the middleman. I wanted to say I really hope that moving forward— – you know, blaming women for putting off having children for a rise in breast cancer rates. I think that there is like like a link between those two things. But I don't think that really we've studied enough about we haven't really done enough research into how what we consume and what touches our food impacts cancer rates, especially breast cancer rates. And so I think that, like, I just really – look, our environment is being poisoned by giant corporations whose leadership and the heirs of the leadership are able to lead comfortable, long, happy lives. And everyone is suffering a little bit as a result of it. And I do think that, like, the sooner we minimize how much we poison our environment, the healthier all human beings will be. Get your mammogram and then, you know, lobby your representatives about no longer dumping poison into the groundwater.
Yeah. And with that.
I have one more thing. This is kind of like a fun story, but it's not a fun story because of like what happened. Oh. But it's a
Do you have a that guy for the group?
I've got a fuck that guy. Fuck Texas State Representative. We're in Texas a lot this week. Fuck Texas State Representative Brian Slayton. He is fucking disgusting. He is one of the leading voices in Texas speaking out against groomers. And by groomers, he means LGBTQ people, drag queens reading books at story hours. You know, anybody that targets someone who is young and inexperienced and tries to slowly ready them for a sexual encounter. Oh, wait a second. Brian Slayton himself is a groomer. The House committee in Texas wants to expel him because he engaged in an inappropriate sexual relationship with a subordinate who was 19 years old.
Yikes!
And it went down at his apartment. So gross. He gave the young woman alcohol, and then he had sex with her. I really need, if you're 19 and you're listening to this, if you're 18 and you're listening to this, it is not your fault if your creepy older boss came onto you and you didn't know what to do. Not your fault.
Not your fault.
I also really want everyone who hasn't had that happen to them to go into adulthood running, thinking, it is not okay for this to happen ever. And it is not a compliment when a man shows me attention like this. And it is not a reflection of me being particularly mature or special. It is this person being a fucking creep. Slayton was also, he allegedly did this with other staffers too. He was a real family man, 45-year-old who had sex with at least one of his staff and also was creepy with several others. And he's repeatedly declined comment. But fuck that fucking guy. Fuck that fucking groomer.
Fuck that fucking guy. But here's my question, Aaron. If his wife wanted to divorce him, would the Texas legislature believe that it was a fault-free divorce?
No, I think they pretty much proved adultery. Yep. Well, so they can go ahead and repeal that law, but she can still divorce that motherfucker. All right. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, personal political.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step 3, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step 4, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Sylvia's Synergy Effect, brought to you by Synergy Home Care.
Getting back in the kitchen got mom back into life. After her stroke, she felt uncomfortable doing what she used to do. But with her Synergy caregiver, Emma, things changed. She got help at home and regained the confidence to get back to her old recipes. Now the hardest thing is getting mom to stop making her biscuits. So good.
We believe getting back to what you love can keep you moving forward. Find your Synergy effect with Synergy Home Care.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And we're back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that is supportive like a bra, but also freeing, like not wearing a bra. Alyssa, I have a question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
We were, this lit up the group chat. I feel like this article lit up many, many group chats over the course of the last week. And that's the article, the profile in the New York Times, rebranding Elizabeth Holmes. She is now Liz Holmes, she says.
Liz.
And she's nice now. Do we need to shut down all the Elizabeths until we can figure out what the hell's going on?
I mean, look, there are some not great Elizabeths out there, but I don't think that we can let Elizabeth Holmes, Liz Holmes, represent them all. You know what I mean?
What if we split the difference and we were like, okay, Elizabeth, you can't go by Liz, but we will let you go by Lizzie, like Lizzie Borden?
Maybe. That's a step in a better direction, I think.
I think that's a little bit more honest. You do get to change your identity, but it should be an identity that reminds us of an axe murderer.
Yes, and I do feel like Elizabeth Holmes and Lizzie Holmes are perfect caricatures of one another.
It's like Hannah Montana and Miley Cyrus. But that's essentially what the piece was kind of trying to do. It was trying to paint the Elizabeth Holmes that we all dressed up like for Halloween in 2018 as a character that she'd created. And so I really want to get into whether or not she's owed forgiveness, the bizarreness of the profile, and, you know, whether there's any sexism baked into the way Holmes was treated. And rounding out our panel today is somebody who we always love having join us. She is Crooked's VP of Politics and a longtime friend of Hysteria, Shaniqua McClendon. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me. Hi.
So I want to let you get started. Shaniqua, what did you make of this rebranding of Elizabeth Holmes into Liz Holmes? Do you believe it is legit?
I think it's a legit effort. Sorry, I'm stumbling. It was just, I read the article and I still just have like so many thoughts. But the thing that stuck out the most to me, maybe not the most, but one of the things that initially stuck out to me was the author of the article and how much I just feel like she blindly walked into this rebrand, not consciously. It's like she really thought that she had, it felt like she thought she was friends with Elizabeth by the end of it. But then she ends the article with, "No, I'm a journalist. I can't come back here. I declined the invitation to be friends." But the whole article was, "Ooh, I'm hanging out with her. She's so normal. We got this food this day." And I don't know. It just, she revealed so much that I felt like it didn't feel like real journalism.
So Shaniqua, you know who the author is, right? Amy Chozick?
So I don't know. I saw people talking crap about her, but I don't actually know that much about her.
So Amy Chozick covered the Hillary Clinton campaign in 2016. She was like the main Times voice covering the Hillary Clinton campaign, which is why the piece, another reason that the piece was kind of like surprising to me, because Chozick like knows her shit. Like she knows what she's doing. She wrote The Girls on the Bus. Mm-hmm. She's like really a smart, savvy journalist and writer, which makes me think that maybe Elizabeth / Liz Holmes is a more powerful manipulator than any of us could have imagined.
I took notes as I read. My last note was, or second to last, was basically that this woman got conned by a con artist. And she just kind of fell for it in the end.
Well, at least she didn't invest any money in a new company.
Yeah. Always smarter than the men.
Yeah. Alyssa, what did you make of this whole rebrand effort from Elizabeth to Liz? Do you buy it? Is it real?
Erin, this is the hardest of abso-fucking-lutely knots for me. The hardest. Okay, guess, you know what? Bernie Madoff and Bernard Madoff are the same fucking person. So are Liz and Elizabeth. And you know what? When I read this, the one thing that I felt like was spectacularly fucking missing from it is the harm she did. This wasn't some dipshit who had an app that tells you how to go. She wasn't Adam Newman. Adam Newman is like a reprehensible person.
Yeah.
But what he did didn't take people's healthcare into their fucking hands. In a world, in a country where our healthcare system is so devastatingly broken, and you see people who are hungry, who are desperate for low-cost healthcare options and alternatives. And she presented them with one. And it's like, we have, I don't know, have we forgotten that she lied about people's fucking blood results?
Yeah.
That people were told they had cancer when they didn't have cancer and were probably told they didn't have cancer when they did have cancer. This is so appalling. Like, what she did was not just some fucking Ponzi scheme that the founders do. And, you know, she was not Tom fucking Brady losing money on crypto. This was someone who created something that did irreparable damage to people and to an industry and provided false hope in a world where, like, there isn't much. And so fuck her. And I'm glad she had kids, and I'm glad she's probably going to some upscale prison. But, like, do I think that she found God? Through the whole thing, all she did was make excuses. She blamed being a woman and how she had to adopt the voice and she had to do. You know what? Maybe part of that's true, but it's not what made you lie about whether your blood testing machine worked or not. You know, that is, to me, fuck her, fuck the profile. Like, it is, if in this instance, to me, I think she's actually getting a pass because this, the world is harder on women, but she also did something which is not fair. I mean, it's not, it shouldn't be true, but it probably is true that the amount of money she went and got from old white men who invested in her blindly because probably sometime in history they didn't buy Facebook stock and they're like, I'm still going to get the big one even though I'm rich. I still want to be richer. And they invested in her, but you know what? Probably a lot fucking harder for women to go out and raise capital after what she did, because everyone's looking for an excuse to not invest in women and people of color, and she gave them an excuse. So fuck her.
Yeah. Yeah. And just one other thing to add on to that. There's a section where it says there's an unspoken lesson for female executives. You're allowed to be successful, but not too successful. One, she wasn't successful. Two,
exactly.
The whole thing was a lie. It wasn't that she created something that just needed a little bit more hope. It actually did not work. And so I don't think you can take happened to her, which is she got caught lying, and then say now women are just set back because we can't lie the same. I don't know. It's just bizarre.
Well, Shaniqua, what's really funny is I had that exact pull quote up. I wish I could, like, show you my screen. I'm looking at it right now, and that was, like, the next thing I was going to say. That was from a letter that one of her sorority sisters wrote to the judge who presided over over Holmes's trial. And what it made me think of is, you know, I think that social media takes every legitimate criticism of women, feminism, et cetera, whiteness, et cetera, and oftentimes figures out a way to extract the misogyny and then, like, spit it back, like, complaining about white women liking things or white feminism is a lot of times just people complaining about women or people complaining about feminism. But this was a case where I was like, whoa, this is, like, white feminism run amok. Like, this is exactly the original version of what it was, which was, like, the use of femininity as a shield to defend privilege, like unbelievable privilege and terrible behavior. I do think one of the points that they're making, but they're coming at it from the wrong side, is like, well, men get away with this, right? And they do, but they shouldn't. Nobody should get away with
It's kind
nobody should get away with. And but also, I feel like what she did was so much more egregious because it was about people's health. You know what I mean? Did Adam Neumann run some sort of nut, you know, investor scheme at WeWork? Yeah, sure. You know, Travis, all these other founders, are they terrible? Sure, they're terrible. But she was dealing with blood. She was taking people's blood. Like, she had people's blood.
Their products worked. Like, it wasn't like, it's not like Uber created cars, self-driving cars that were crashing into walls and killing everyone. You know,
she knew what
she was doing. Yeah, exactly. She knew what she was doing. And it just, Aaron, like you said, like, there's a lot of things that women go through, but all I could think about in this moment, and I think it's because of the news that came out yesterday that Senator Feinstein is headed back to D.C., it's all I could think about, that there's been all of these claims of sexism because people want her to resign and people want a fully functioning senator to represent, you know, a state that has
20 million
people. Yeah, so many people in it.
I mean, there's 40 million people in California. She is an inept representation of half of us.
And because she's a woman, we just have to take it. Be happy you have a woman senator. Like, it literally makes no sense. And it's, to me, you know, if there's any, like, real victim here, it's all the people who are legitimately using feminism to make claims and causes for women, to just have it reduced down to feminism means women can do whatever they want, good or bad. Which, where does that leave us? Because the people who end up getting away with it are white women. It's not marginalized women who are able. A black woman would not get away with this, you know. Just, I'm thinking about the smaller things that black women have gone to prison and jail for. Story from years ago about a woman who sent her kids to school in a different zip code using, I think, her parents' address something, and she went to jail, or voting unknowingly. And where, you know, where's their redemption story? Where's the truth behind where and how they got to where they are? But here we are with this New York Times profile of this normal woman who made some mistakes, and mistakes aren't illegal.
And, like, the life that she's living right now is, like, good. As I was reading the article, I was like, where is she getting money? They're, like, talking about how she, you know, they're moving around all the time. They're in a but then they're in a rental by the Pacific Coast. So, okay, well, that, you know, you can't, like, pay for that in hugs and smiles. Like, how are you paying for that? And about three quarters of the way through the article, it mentioned that her husband is, like, an hotel heir or something. And it's like, oh, she's look, I don't want to speculate about their marriage, but I feel like she's conned literally everybody in her life as an adult. And so, like, that just seems like a savvy move by a woman who, like,
yes,
that she, a 25-year-old she met. Yeah.
Look, I don't want to. I do think that, like, the preponderance of evidence, which we were discussing in news, the preponderance of evidence is, I think, that it is more likely than not likely that somebody who has a long history of conning and scamming and doing whatever it takes to make the most possible money with absolutely no regard for who she hurts might have done that again at some point. Alyssa, to tag on to what you were saying about the healthcare thing, and how much it's set back both, like, women and people of color who are trying to get money. You know, Adam Neumann, speaking of somebody who, you know, is like a bit of a fuck around, just raised like $300 million from a VC. I mean, when I say just, I mean, within the last year he raised, somebody gave him another $300 million. The man has a track record of fucking up, and people were like, he's probably got it handled. People who are in any way marginalized, white people or white women, to an extent, but more so, anybody who is not a white person, women of color, have a really difficult time getting VC money to start companies in the first place. And I feel like, you know, with interest rates as high as they are and how expensive it is to borrow money for anybody trying to start a business, that's only going to get worse.
Yeah.
And Liz Holmes did so much – she did so much damage also to – okay, so I'm like a person who's always been terrified of getting my blood drawn,
mm-hmm.
like terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that like now that endeavor, like maybe we can figure this out by taking less blood – is like poisonous.
Totally.
Nobody gets to try that idea anymore.
Yep.
She ruined it. Shaniqua, do you think it's possible for someone like Elizabeth Holmes to get a second chance? Like, what penance would she have to pay in order for you to believe that she genuinely is trying to be a good person?
I mean, to not invent, like, to not have profiles, to like not get all this attention. I mean, I think she just needs to go to jail, come out and just live her life not in the spotlight. The article ends with her saying she still has all these ideas that she wants to work on in the healthcare space. And it's like, can you not kill people?
No,
like,
ma'am.
What is next?
No, ma'am.
So, I honestly think she just needs to let it go. Yeah. And again, like thinking about all the male entrepreneurs who have done shady stuff that's probably illegal and haven't hurt anyone, it's, yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm not someone who's like big on jail. So, and I don't, honestly, reading the profile, I don't think that's going to affect her. I think she's probably going to con some people in jail. And by the time she gets out, like, she's going to have a little cult following in there.
100%.
But she just needs to go away. She needs to go away. That's what she needs to do.
Did you, mm-hmm. and did we take away from that article that she's actually not going to prison right now? Like,
oh,
she was supposed to go. There was this whole windup that she was going to have mm-hmm. to report on April 27th. But she got, and they're appealing, and she's asked to be free during her appeal. And that seems to be the case. So, again, a privilege that would not be afforded to everyone.
And they waited last minute to do the appeal, I think, so that it would be right up against when she was supposed to go in. And one other thing I just wanted to respond to that you said, Aaron, about, you know, women and people of color not having as much access to VC money. They don't even have access to, like, a good life. Like, you know, they don't even have access to the assumption that they are innocent when something happens. And so the thought that they would even get anywhere near what she's been able to do is just pretty impossible to even think it would happen.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what else?
That's a really good point.
Sorry. This part also really stuck in my craw, as my mother would say. When they go on about how the reporter goes on about how poor Liz was socially stunted because when other kids were 20 and out going to parties, that she was there doing very serious work. What? Being socially stunted is now an excuse for a multi-million-dollar scam? What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I just, it felt like there were so many parts in the profile where we were supposed to have some sympathy or worse empathy for her. And like the pic, did you notice that like in the picture, it looks like she's breastfeeding, but she's not? Like why?
Yeah.
So weird.
It's the weirdest thing.
Oh, they're hiding the kids' faces from the camera. The kids' face, they're not having their kids' faces be public.
Right.
So she both of the kids'
face.
I was like, oh, but yeah, no, it's the, that's, I think that's like legit. not having
all your right, all face right, all right. I mean, I agree with the kids' face not being on camera,
but you
she definitely
like
had to have them
something.
In the photo. She definitely had to have them in the photo so people would know she was a mother.
Yeah.
And therefore had been redeemed.
I think that might be also some like clever art directing and photo directing for the editors at the New York Times, because it did seem like really what Elizabeth wants is to be viewed as this sort of like, maternal, loving, soft figure. And so having her hold her baby in that position that moms often hold, sometimes like, I don't know, when Juniper was little, sometimes I would just hold her down there because it would calm her down to just be close to a boob. She'd be
right.
like, ah, great. This is my pal. but like that pose is a choice. And I think that it contributes to some of what was so provocative about the New York Times profile. I did find something really telling. There was a moment in the article where, hang on one second, let me pull it up. Of course, Ms. Holmes also tried to control the story, often with scorched earth tactics. She is typically docile, but got visibly upset when I asked about how the lawyer David Boies had threatened litigation against people who spoke negatively about Theranos. Alex Schultz, the father of the Theranos employee turned whistleblower Tyler Schultz and the son of George Schultz, told the court that Tyler, quote, slept with a knife under his pillow every night, thinking that someone was going to come and murder him in the night. Okay, so look, I'm not a therapist. All I know about narcissism is what I've read on Wikipedia and seen on TikTok, and a lot of that information is dubious at best. But one thing that a lot of people with disordered responses, or emotional responses, do is when you get close to the truth, they react with anger. They try to scare you away from the truth. And the fact that she got visibly upset when she was confronted with something that she had participated in an attempt probably to, like, convince the reporter to stay away from that. That's fucking manipulative.
Totally.
That's manipulative. You want to talk to a reporter, answer their questions. Like, you know, you're coming to a reporter and you want them to write about you. You have to answer their questions. That, to me, was very telling. And that, to me, made me think that, like I said, I have a lot of faith in Chozick as a reporter and writer.
Totally.
I think she's savvier than some interpretations of this article, like, have led people to believe. And her inclusion of that, to me, felt like she was trying to signal to the readers that she's still kind of, like, unhinged.
I think that's fair. I mean, I didn't come away from the article thinking that it was – that she was completely – like, it wasn't a full-on puff piece. But it was very much in favor of Elizabeth Holmes, kind of us seeing it provided a lot more middle ground than I think is necessary for someone who did something as bad as what she did. Like, we don't need to consider that she's somewhere in the middle of, you know, this innocent teenager who's 35 but hasn't grown, you know, mentally enough to actually be a 35-year-old. And that, you know, that's one end of the spectrum. And the other end of the spectrum is she's a psycho and she's, like, somewhere in the middle. I think she is closer to someone who is really smart, manipulative, and knew how to get over on people. And quite frankly, used sexism in her favor. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of the men who gave her that money. One could argue that If those men were sexist, they wouldn't have given her the money at all. But maybe they were sexist in the way that they thought she couldn't con them out of their money. You know, why did they write those huge checks? And then
it's a good point.
Yeah, just, you know, not believing a woman could pull one over on them, that they saw what she presented. They were smart. And so it made sense. And so it must have been right. And so we touched on this already, but I just hate when I don't always hate it, but in this instance, I hate when patriarchy is just used to shield women from the accountability that all of us should have.
Absolutely. But you know what, who uses that in a way that I think is, like, genius? You know the reporter Lauren Windsor? Reporter who, she's the one who gets, like, conservatives to say absolutely fucking wild shit into a recorder. She's great. We should actually have her on the show. But what she does is she just is, like, a pretty blonde woman, and she'll wear, like, a red MAGA cap, and she'll, like, ask them questions that lead them to believe that she's, like, on their side. Like, what do you think about, you know, she'll use their like, key phrases. Like, she'll call, you know, migrants illegals. You know, she will talk about, you know, she'll say abortionists. You know, she'll say words that they interpret as, like, oh, this person couldn't possibly be lying to me because she's a pretty blonde white lady in a MAGA hat. And she just, like, over and over again is able to get them to say insane things. I think that is using patriarchy and those low expectations for good. Holmes probably used them for evil. This is all kind of bringing me to the George Santos of it all, too. And Shaniqua, I'm curious what you make of the fact that he's now, as of Wednesday morning, he's in custody, facing federal charges. Do you think that George Santos will get more chances than we are willing to give Elizabeth Holmes?
That is interesting. I don't Honestly, I don't think so. I think everyone is over him, and he's been just kind of like evading accountability, and it's finally like knocked on his door. And the unfortunate part is I don't think he's going to not be given more chances because he doesn't deserve them. I think Republicans are going to be happy that he is finally off of their hands, and it's politically advantageous to just kind of, you know, shuffle him out. But, you know, whatever it takes.
Yeah. He was also doing like scams that were involving dogs. And
that was, I mean, what depths of depravity does one need to have fake? He raised, that motherfucker raised money for a veteran's, I think I have this right, a veteran's dog that was dying of cancer and then didn't give him the money.
Yeah.
And the dog died of cancer. Like,
it's bad.
What?
That's pretty bad.
Fuck.
I mean, like, I feel as though the scale of Elizabeth Holmes' deception was, like, much more massive and severe and serious, but the actual bite of the individual story involving a dying dog and a traumatized veteran, it's like, oh, my God. All he's got to do is kick a baby, and it's tic-tac-toe of nobody's ever going to forgive you, man.
And he had the nerve to run for Congress. I think that is the part that people are just like, no one was paying attention to you, did all of this crazy stuff, and then you got elected to Congress in a competitive district. So, I mean, okay, that's not what's at the top of the list, but, you know, we're hanging on by it.
No, I think that it's really important that, like, over the next couple years, we as progressives and of people who care about, like, decency really come out against the audacity.
Mm-hmm.
We need to come out against the audacity.
Yes.
Like the audacity of Liz Holmes. Like
the audacity of Elizabeth dopes. Holmes. I had to. It was such low-hanging fruit.
Oh, my God. I mean, that's really the culprit, isn't it? It's the audacity. And,
truly.
And sometimes that's all it takes in America to
succeed. Well, I need to get some.
Succeed.
I need to get some
I know.
More.
Yeah. Let's get some signs. Let's get some WGA picketing style signs that say audacity with like an X. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Shaniqua, stick around. We have a really, really wildly positive final segment for everybody, and I'm really excited.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Think about your mentors and idols, the people who inspire you most. While it may look like they have all the answers, they don't. But they do know when to ask questions and seek the support they need. In a world that glorifies hyper-independence, it's easy to forget that we're all better with a support system. Therapy is a great way to find a consistent source of support in your life, so you can break free from the outdated belief that seeking help is a sign of weakness. BetterHelp has experienced therapists ready to help you with challenges ranging from anxiety and depression to relationships and stress. It's convenient, too. You can join a session with the click of a button, helping you fit therapy into your busy life. And you deserve that. You can even send your therapist a message anytime something comes up. Build your support system with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that just this once is going to end on a nice warm hug instead of a petty session. So let's start with our wildly positive final segment. The reason I wanted to do this in the first place is that this is apparently Woman Week. It is Teacher Appreciation Week. It is National Nurses Week. And Mother's Day is on Sunday. Now, of course, there are like many other jobs that are primarily women. I actually met a dietitian this week who reminded me of, first of all, the importance of dietitians within healthcare systems. And secondly, that they are massively underpaid and they're almost all women. So shout out to dietitians, even though it's not your week. I just wanted to give her a hat tip. But I also want to give a hat tip to nurses. Nurses are 2% of the American workforce. That is a lot. There are 4.2 million RNs in this country, 950,000 licensed LPNs in the U.S. There are four times as many nurses in the U.S. than doctors. Their work is completely essential. When I was working in a nursing home, the nurses knew more about the patients than the doctors did, to be completely honest. And they were often disrespected and ignored, and they really had to be completely tough and speak up. And they were always fierce advocates for their patients. Nurses are also really important in the labor movement right now. They're organizing all over the country. Nurses' unions are winning their members fair contracts and humane pay and working conditions. We're still experiencing a shortage of nurses. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it is a job that is not thankless, but it is a job that is increasingly treated by a lot of people as something that doesn't have value, and it does. It is without nurses, this country would completely fall apart. So I want to give a shout out to nurses. Also teachers. Everybody knows my mom. She's a high school administrator now, but she was a teacher for most of my childhood. I think there's something really special about what makes a teacher. Teachers' kids. Got a couple uncles who are teachers. Got a couple aunts who are teachers. My sister's a teacher. They work their butts off. They care so much about their students. They do so much more work than they need to do because they want to. I think that in a lot of states, they're being treated with a lot of disrespect. Mm-hmm. And the amount of bravery and backbone it takes for them to wake up every morning and go to work and focus on their students rather than all the fuckery in state governments is really admirable. So teachers, shout out to you and everything you do. And shout out to Alyssa's mom and everybody who works in schools that isn't a teacher.
27 years.
27 years?
Yep. Wow.
27 years. Oh, my goodness. Really important people, really important work, primarily feminine professions, although male teachers obviously exist and do a great job. But I just really want to, you know, give it up to teachers, give it up to nurses. You guys are the best. And this country would fall apart without you.
Absolutely.
So that's my little super positive hat tip. Alyssa, what do you want to give a super positive shout out to?
Here's my super positive shout out. You guys, it is Girl Scout cookie season. The Girl Scouts are everywhere. They're selling cookies. And I have always heard about Troop 6000, but I now know the origin story of Troop 6000. Troop 6000 in New York City was founded by Gisele Burgess 6 years ago. She was working for the Girl Scouts of America when she fell on hard times and had to move into a shelter. And so she went to the Girl Scouts and said, "Can I start a troop?" So she started Troop 6000, which was for girls experiencing homelessness or living in shelters. The money that they raise from selling the cookies pays for all of the girls to go on trips, camp. It pays for their activities. And you know what? She has helped sell over a million and a half dollars of Girl Scout cookies. She has opened Troop 6000 up to immigrants and asylum seekers who are in the U.S. She has over 2,500 women and girls across 20 shelters, and they have opened up across similar chapters have opened up across the country. And I just think, as someone who never made it past Brownie because she couldn't sell her fucking cookies, I think it's just like a wonderful thing. And one of the news organizations did a big profile piece on her, which was wonderful. And you can just see the joy and camaraderie it brings to these women and kids who are out there like selling their cookies and going to state parks and learning skills. And it's just fucking gorgeous. So shout out to Giselle Burgess.
Aw.
Amazing.
And I bought Shaniqua cookies from Troop 6000. And if you Google Troop 6000, you can actually buy cookies and donate them to shelters in New York, which I did because it felt good.
Amazing. That's awesome. Is a great tip. We'll put a link to that in our show notes. Shaniqua, what is your wildly positive final segment shout out?
My wildly positive shout out is to mothers. As you mentioned, Mother's Day is coming up on Sunday. I actually lost my mother 13 years ago. Well, it'll be 13 years in July. And I think I was like 22 years old. And it really, you know, her friends, her women friends kind of came around me and my sisters and just really filled in a lot of gaps. A lot of women in my life, my best friend from high school, her mother, like just so many women came around and said, you know, your mother's not here, but we are. And since then, I mean, even before then, but since then, I've just had a lot of amazing women kind of fill in the gaps for me. And so I want to say thank you to all of them. And just a reminder to everyone who has maybe lost their mother or grandmother or a woman who raised you, any guardians, that, you know, you can look elsewhere for the support that you need. It's not always going to be the same, but there are a lot of women out there who will make the difference, and some of them are not even older than you. I have friends who are mothers, and just even watching them and the way that they are with their children. But specifically, I would like to shout out my grandmother and also a woman named Judge Terrell, who has been a mentor to me for some time. Her name is Judge Mary Terrell. Even her kids call her Judge. but she runs an organization called the High Tea Society. I met her when I was interning at the White House. She was one of the volunteers in the Office of Correspondence. And she asked me to come speak to her students about going to college, all young women from D.C. And then the next thing I knew, I was planning a fundraiser for her. And I mean, she just like kind of put me to work. But when my mother died, her and her family were really there for me. She like gave me a job while I was trying to find a job before I started working on the Hill, and has just continued to be, you know, just an amazing person to me. And now that I'm back in D.C., I get to see her more. So just kind of a shout out to all the mothers, but all the women who are stepping in to help those of us whose mothers aren't here anymore.
Shaniqua, thank you so much. I'm tearing up.
Yeah, me too.
That was really sweet. Shaniqua McClendon, thank you so much for joining us and for that really lovely tribute. Alyssa Mastromonaco, thank you for being my ride or die. Listeners, thank you for tuning in. If you like what you're hearing, please tell your friends to listen. Leave us a nice review and rate us so other people can find this podcast. And there will be more Hysteria for you next week. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Fiona Pestana is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Megan Patzel. Thank you to Gabrielle Leverett-Diaz, Ewa Okulate, Amelia Montooth, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production support every week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on Instagram and Twitter for more original content, host takeovers, and other community events.
Hey there, listeners. I want to recommend a superlative Supreme Court podcast to help bring clarity in these confounding times. Amicus is a podcast from Slate about the law, the Supreme Court justices who interpret it, and the broader U.S. justice system. It's hosted by Dahlia Lithwick, who's been watching the High Court for 2 decades and brings all of that experience and knowledge to examining the judicial system and our democracy. Dahlia is joined by guests with deep knowledge of the law and policy who will help guide you through the confirmation hearings on the Hill and voting rights battles in the courts. Slate's Amicus podcast. Subscribe now wherever you listen.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big money at Menards and stock up on your favorite Procter & Gamble products. We carry quality products from brands you can trust, like Dawn, Tide, Bounty, and more. Keep your home clean and stocked with essentials like paper towels, toilet paper, dish soap, and more. Save big money on Procter & Gamble products now through February 8th. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for other great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.